crashing into the windows here at SFU, and it numbers in the hundreds per year, which is, I guess, a big deal.
It's not the seagull, though, because they got them at Loheed Mall, seagulls. No, they got a whole bunch of them.
I don't know. I think
at times,
yeah, a seagull smacking into a window would be a big mess. They're big birds, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when you said that, because I have, it matters at Loheed Mall area, because that's where I live. I live directly west, and there are times a whole lot of seagulls. Not lately, but there have been.
Right. Well, anyway, we'll look into this story a bit more, and hopefully we can bring you some more information on a future week about what's going on with the birds at SFU.
So anyway, Al Gore, it was 2006 he brought up the documentary, and I think they were saying it was the only time a documentary won two Academy Awards. He won the Nobel Prize. But you really
And that was his documentary, An Inconvenient Truth.
Right. Now, you don't hear a lot about him now. Have you heard about him lately? No, he's kind of in the background, you sort of notice.
I imagine he's getting up in years, too.
Well, that...
Maybe.
Well, one thing was interesting. Time magazine had an issue a few months back. They said 100 people who were fighting climate change or whatever. And Al Gore was not on the list.
Oh, interesting.
And Greta Thunberg wasn't either, which was interesting. Hmm. But the other thing, I always thought it was sort of interesting, like the NAFTA debate. That was 1993, was Larry King live. I guess maybe there's some people live who are not. Oh, I think some of them may have seen it in the internet in their childhoods or whatever.
And at that time, Al Gore would have been Bill Clinton's vice president, right?
That's right, vice president. And so I kind of... always kind of thought, like, NAFTA didn't sound to me like an environmental kind of sensibility. Now, I actually watched it over the weekend again.
Right. And so just before you get on, I just actually clarify that NAFTA is the North American Free Trade Agreement. So the first big free trade agreement between the U.S. and Canada
and Mexico. There was 1988. There was an agreement between Canada and the United States,
and then NAFTA includes Mexico into the grouping,
right?
Yeah,
there's a, I'm going to credit it, socialistworker.org, and they actually did something. I guess it was actually around the time the movie came out, 2006. But they were talking about Al Gore's record as vice president. They said wasn't a very good environmental record. Like permits for toxic waste increments, opening up Western forests but to logging, tax breaks to oil companies drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. And they said that NAFTA and GATT, I forget specifically what GATT was, gutted environmental standards across the globe. Now, this was another interesting thing. They said Al Gore had a half a million stake in Occidental Petroleum, and they arguably he could have pressured to stop drilling in the sacred lands of the Mokolobean Owa tribe? Columbia Owa tribe. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I mean, I think the problem that Ross Perot had was that it would take a while for what he was saying to be seen as true in a sense. I think, I don't know, how do you feel? I mean, maybe do you remember this debate, or do you feel that some of the points Ross Perot was making has sort of over the years been sort of backed up in a way?
I don't specifically remember this date debate. I mean, it was
31 years ago. But it's something but it was like Larry King used to joke, oh, he didn't get the point, he lost the debate. Mm-hmm. But Al Gore was sort of Mr. Slick towards it, like any kind of contention that one of the points in the debate is that he brought, because it was on television, he brought up a picture. He said, this is how Mexican workers live. Mm-hmm. And sort of inferring that, you know, basically you're going to get the plants transferred to Mexico and they're going to be at a lower wage. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. And I don't know. I mean, what did we see? We saw Detroit. For a while, there was no car companies there operating. About 12 years ago, didn't it all kind of end? They ended Ford or something?
No, Ford's still going.
No, they ended, but it wasn't called GM Place for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Because GM didn't exist or something?
No, I think they just didn't have as much. GM still exists. Ford still exists. Chrysler disappeared. Chrysler was the third big American car company, and it was eventually bought out by Fiat. So I think in some fashion it still exists, but not as an independent company anymore because it bought up by the Italian firm Fiat. And okay. I think they don't use the Chrysler brand anymore.
But Detroit, didn't it go into major trouble?
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, in the 2008... crash, you know, one of the things that happened is of course, you know, there was a crash and everybody stopped buying cars because, you know,
yeah,
things were looking bad. And so suddenly with that sudden change in the outlook for car purchases, all the car companies were in a big trouble. But then the U.S. government in particular, and I think Canada too, because of course that industry is cross
border. But didn't they actually
came in with a big bailout scheme?
Okay,
and kept them afloat until things got better.
Didn't they tear down some of the factories though in Detroit?
I'm sure they did. I mean, there's been another long term trend of factories either moving to Mexico or to the southern U.S. because many southern U.S. states, you know, set themselves up as what do they call it? There's a term. But basically, they have more restrictive about union policies, so they can, and sort of more lax labor standards, which can make it cheaper. But particularly, they can set up a new factory that's not unionized often. And of course, you know, going to Mexico offers even cheaper labor.
Well, maybe Ross Perot had a few points. That's sort of...
Yeah.
Well, I was a bit surprised about something I found out, was that in the United Kingdom, they were bringing An Inconvenient Truth over to schools, mm-hmm, as a videotape, and they were watching it. And somebody brought it to a court case there. And they found... for example, you notice how you don't hear about sea level rises anymore.
Well, you do sometimes, but yeah.
But supposedly, and I was a bit surprised about this, there was a YouTube posting, and it kind of was going over the errors in the film. And supposedly in this century, we're not going to see this.
Mm-hmm.
There's 7 meters that can happen, but it won't happen this century.
Right.
So it seemed, I was a bit surprised because that used to be, you notice that you don't hear that a lot now.
And certainly not as much as you used to. I think you still hear a bit about it, but it, you know, I think some of the talking points have moved on to new issues.
Well, I know, but I mean, I was wondering if that was ever a valid talking point from what I've been hearing, because it seems that it isn't.
Well, I think it's like a lot of the environment, you know, the impacts, they're not going to happen this decade or even the next decade, but...
No, it's century, supposedly. In this case, it's the century.
Mm-hmm.
That was what... And I, anyway, I mentioned earlier on about Blood and Gore. It was David Blood, who was the senior partner of it, and Al Gore was the chairman...
Mm-hmm.
And chairperson, I guess. And he has made over $300 million, supposedly, over this. And these are just some of the things that some people, you can call them reactionaries, you can call them whatever, they've been very suspect of this. I don't know. He just hasn't really stood forth over the years, I think, Al Gore. How do you feel about him over the years yourself?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think he you know, with particularly with that film, he made a really good impact. I mean, I think it was... Have you seen the film?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it makes, you know, it puts together a pretty strong argument about, you know, how, you know, the various impacts of climate change are interconnected and that they will have, you know, a big impact on our life and the need to start doing lives, not only of ourselves, but, you know, in the future and for our children. You know, and I think that was, you know, one of the things about an issue like climate change is it's really quite complex and there's a lot of sort of science and it's easy to, or hard to, can be quite hard to understand how it all fits together. And it did a pretty good job of taking that argument and putting it in terms people could understand with, you know, the way it was presented and the graphics that it used. You know, and I'm sure there are criticisms of specific parts of it, but I think overall, as a tool for making ordinary folks actually understand the issue.
Well, it isn't brought up that much anymore.
No, well, you know, that's how our culture works, though, right? But, you know, I mean, it's nearly 20 years ago now, so.
Well, all the same, however, I think that some of the information has been in the film.
Yeah.
And that film has been under attack.
Yeah.
There has been a bit of that over the years. That,
yeah.
And I was the sea level rises. I was a bit surprised about, because I didn't know that there was, in this century. Because I think they were saying, well, why is he getting this beach house or something? they were saying that about him and so on. Oh, you know, it's interesting. Al Gore, because he wasn't vice president. In June 1992, when they had the, the Rio Earth Summit, but right. He was the U.S. Senate delegate to it.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, I guess, he took on the climate change thing like the late 80s, I think.
Right.
He's been, I don't know. So, actually, there's, I don't know, you know about the film director Frank McCapra. Mm-hmm. You heard about Frank Capra?
Yep.
Mr. Smith Goes to, It's a Wonderful Life is the one they show.
Yep.
But he did these scientific shorts during the 1950s that were a bit odd. Like animation was a bit odd. Yep. He had one talking about that we were supposed to going to get all flooded. It was presented. It wasn't like it was ever not presented previously. But my tablet, something went wrong with my tablet.
Oh, dear.
That's why I'm back to my notes.
All right.
We don't have the diddle cam to show you this.
All right, so how do you want to wrap this up?
I think I said the major points here about Al. I mean, I think it's a lot of people say, well, a lot of people don't quite buy into it. I think partly Al Gore is kind of responsible for it in a way, because I don't think he's handled it all that greatly over the years.
Handled what? What do you mean?
Well, just his... any credibility he has on this. I mean, I don't think he's handled it.
Right.
There was a TED Talk. I saw a bit of a TED Talk. And I don't think there was anything much on it. He just his basic rhetoric on it.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Peter. Al Gore, one-time environmental hero. Now just a regular guy with a lot of money.
Well, kind of, I don't know, forgotten.
Yeah. All right, thanks for that, Peter. Next up we have this bit on the Jai Li Jamboree Cultural Celebration in Nishka Territories, celebrating the return of the salmon.
And Delawan, I'm Sabrina Spencer with The Journey Continues, highlighting local stories that matter to you. The upcoming Jai Jamboree Cultural Celebration in the Nishkat Village of Lac La Zap is set for June 14th and 15th. It will showcase Indigenous culture and community unity. Bobby Clark, Chief Administrative Officer of Lac La Zap Village Government, shared insights into the event's inception and its role in preserving traditional song and dance, particularly during the salmon harvest season.
Bobby Clark, the Chief Administrative Officer with Lac La Zap Village Government.
The Jai Jamboree Cultural Celebration will be taking place in the Nishkat Village of Lac La Zap, June 14th and 15th. So what inspired the creation of the Jai Cultural Celebration?
So the Lac La Zap Cultural Dancers have been active since 1996 and really began to build momentum when we worked towards our trip to Hawaii last year. So we endeavored, it was a huge milestone that we had to work towards to in terms of fundraising to make it a reality. But ultimately, we wanted to take a major trip, and that involved a lot of fundraising and working together to make it a reality. So the Jai Jamboree was created approximately 2 years ago. So the first annual would have been in 2022, and we really saw it as an opportunity to bring cultural dance groups together to keep song and dance alive throughout the year. As you know, we have Hobie every February that is hosted in one of four Nishka villages each year. So aside from Hobie, there was really nothing else within the Nass Valley that celebrates your song and dance. So we saw it as an opportunity to bring community together and to bring dance groups together to really just to keep the culture strong and alive throughout the year.
The celebration is specifically for the return of the salmon, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. So June is typically the month that we see the return of the salmon, starting with the sockeye and the spring salmon. So yeah, it's a change in the harvest season for Minnesota, where the smokehouses begin to be active again with preservation of salmon throughout the season.
And what can attendees expect from this year's celebration in terms of cultural performances, activities, community engagement?
We'll have, again, it's over two days on the 14th and 15th of June, and we have a number of dance groups from within the Nisga Nation and also neighboring nations that are wanting to come and join in the celebration. So we'll have a lineup of performances throughout the 2 days. We'll also be inviting arts and crafts vendors, and yeah, it's just a time to gather. And of course, we'll be providing food as well. Fresh salmon, of course, is going to be a main menu item that everyone will have the opportunity to enjoy.
Are there any special guest performances or dance groups that are participating this year?
We have the four Nishka Village dance groups and the Nishka Urban Local dance groups from Terrace and Prince Rupert as well. So, yes, really just an opportunity to get together in song and dance.
What was the decision for the Lac La Zap Community Center to be host to the celebration?
The Lac La Zap Community Center is a nice, modern, comfortable space that allows for people to settle and enjoy the culture. So, yeah.
And they're kind of central in the Nass Valley, right?
Yeah, so we're about 146 kilometers northwest of Terrace, so it's about an hour and 45-minute drive into the Nass Valley. Yeah, folks can come and enjoy just sightseeing. There's a lot of other attractions in the area, including the Nishka Museum that's located in the village of Lac La Zap as well.
Looking ahead, what are some of the long-term goals for the Jai Jamboree Culture Celebration?
So it's going to be the third annual. So really, we want to make it a long-term annual event where we hope it will grow and flourish, become an attraction for folks of all walks of life to come and enjoy.
Is there anything else you would like to share or add at all?
Other than the fact that we welcome everyone to come and enjoy the Nass Valley and all it has to offer. We look forward to sharing in culture with not only the Nisga Nation, but others that want to come and join us as well.
This story is brought to you in partnership with the Local Journalism Initiative of Canada. You can see the full story at frequencynews.ca.
Hey, Are you a First Nations, Métis, or Inuit student? Not convinced university, college, or vocational trade school is possible? Or wondering what you should do after high school? Inspire can help you and your friends. Register for Inspire's free Indigenous mentorship program, Rivers to Success. Joining Rivers to Success gets you access to great information, great prizes, and exciting content. Discover careers and post-secondary paths geared towards Indigenous students across Turtle Island, just like you. Register online today at rivers2success.ca. Again, that's rivers2success.ca. Prizes, information, and fun are waiting.
And Awaloan, I'm Sabrina Spencer with The Journey Continues, highlighting local stories that matter to you. On May 29th, the Central Choichin Rehabilitation Center in Williams Lake announced the use of discarification. CFNR spoke with Daniel Parrison, the forester for CCR, where he talks about the adoption of discarification for forest rehabilitation. He goes on to say that this technique involves thorough site preparation to create optimal conditions for tree growth, resembling large-scale gardening. It also aims to boost tree survival rates and restore areas affected by wildfires.
My name is Daniel Pearson. I'm the forester for Central Choichin Rehabilitation. It's a joint venture company, 100% owned between the Sidledal First Nations and Plitzingo government.
And whereabouts are you located?
I work out of Williams Lake.
So we received a release that the company is introducing new innovative techniques like disc scarification for forestry.
Yeah, that's right. Like this trenching, we're doing basically it's site preparation. We're trying to create microsites for the trees to grow. Really, it's the same idea behind gardening, where you try to mix the right soils to get the best growing sites for your garden. And we're doing the same thing for the trees. Just a lot of it comes down to like increase the survival rate in the trees we're planting, but it also helps growth and helps to reforest an area quicker, kind of what we're doing. Otherwise, it's easy after these mega wildfires that we're seeing. It kind of removes all the nutrients from the ground. It can turn a forest into a grassland or a very nutrient-poor site, so it's hard to reforest. And by introducing some of these techniques, it's a way for us to actually reforest those areas again.
So what inspired CCR to explore techniques like disc scarification for forest rehabilitation? And how does it differ from conventional methods?
Well, I think what made us decide or try it out was simply that we didn't see the survival rate we wanted to see. We planted a few areas and the trees wouldn't survive. So then we really started looking at options, like what can we do to reforest these sites? And then disc scarification became an option, and it's way more efficient than ripping with the cat. So we were exploring that, and it turned out it worked great for our sites, and We were doing it on a larger scale last year, and we planted it. We're actually planting it right now. So it's going to be really exciting to see what the results are going to be here in a couple of years. From what we can tell currently, it's really working. So that's the main reason, to make sure the trees survive. The trees we plant, we want to make sure they get a good survival rate. Otherwise, we are kind of throwing money away in a way.
So you mentioned that you did this last year. Was that when you first started using this technique?
We started, I think, a few years ago, but it was on a smaller scale. And then we started out small, tried it out, see if it was going to work, and it did. And now we've been slowly ramping up the areas we're doing it in. So to make sure we're doing the right thing, really.
Okay. And then in what ways does this technique contribute to sustainable forest management practice? Well, I guess you just answered that. Sorry. So looking ahead, what are the future plans and goals for expanding this use of disc scarification and other innovative techniques for forestry?
You know what? When it comes to expanding, it's all about, we assess the sites that need reforestation or rehabilitation after fires, or might be mountain pine beetle even, and then we determine if we need this, because this treatment does cost money, and we want to disturb the area as little as possible, but we try to, and now I think we're getting pretty good at it. We try to highlight the areas that will need this for us to successfully reforest it. So the more we do it, the better we get at it, and we start to know more and more what areas that will need this type of treatment to be successful, so that we can make sure that we grow that forest for the future generation.
And what are some of the challenges or limitations that you've had with this disc scarification?
One large challenge is simply it adds cost. So we always have to make sure we spend our money wisely, and so we weigh that with the expected survival rate, and we want to make sure that it's a good investment. So that's really the main concern. Main concern, you can call it that, to make sure that we're using this technique wisely, so that it has a benefit to the site.
This story is brought to you in partnership with the Local Journalism Initiative of Canada. You can see the full story at frequencynews.ca.
And we're coming to the end of the program for this week. You've been listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Joining me in the studio today has been
Peter R.H.
And my name is Magus Teevil. We'll both be back next week with another edition of Speak Up. You can tune in tomorrow for Speak Up. We're going to be bringing you the words and culture special on the Cree language and a number of other interesting segments. On Wednesday, you'll find Intravenous with host Robin Erickson and others of her team, bringing you issues on gender and feminism and much more. And then Thursday is Jesse Wentzloff's program, and Friday we have Speak Up, Act Up, Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon, with Sister C. Charlotte Farrell. All those every morning, weekday morning at 10 a.m. Coming up in just a few minutes will be Democracy Now! But before we finish up, we will be back next week with some more Gardening with Embark. And what are you going to talk about? Do you know what you're going
to... I'll think... No, it's a variety of things.
Okay.
I haven't gotten specific yet. I'll have something.
Okay. So stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up in just a few moments. Wandering Rhythms at noon and a lot more great programming here on CJSF 90.1 FM today. This is Iron and Wine and a track called You Never Know from their brand new album.
Awesome.
You could make gray, call it gold, let it fool your eyes. You could make rain and let it hell your life. Being green grass in a little wind begs you for a dance. You could say love.